to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host. Welcome to episode 58. Today I'm going to be discussing chapter 17 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Cat, Rat, and Dog. I know it's been a few weeks since my last episode, because I am in grad school and it gets super, super crazy busy sometimes. And there's a few weeks there where I had to just study and focus on that. But I have a tiny little break now and I'm able to resume my Prisoner of Azkaban episodes. So really don't have any news to talk about despite, you know, not having an episode for a few weeks. So I could pretty much just get right into it. I mean, just a reminder, you guys can email me at theheiressoflytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. Facebook page is The Heiress of Slytherin Podcast. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And I can get into a little summary of last week's episode, or not last week's episode, but the last episode. And that was chapter 16, Professor Trelawney's prediction. And basically, the students have to study a bunch. Their final exams are coming up. Hermione manages to get to all of them because of her time turner, but the boys don't know that yet. And everybody's stressed out, especially Hermione. Hagrid is also really upset because the appeal's coming up. And unfortunately, he does lose the appeal, so that means Buckbeak is being sentenced to death. And the trio goes to his hut to be with him so that, you know, they can try to comfort him a little bit during Buckbeak's final hours. And they also find Scabbers. Remember Ron's pet rat? That's actually Peter Pettigrew. They all just assume that Crookshanks, Hermione's cat, had eaten him because it's a cat and a rat. But he's actually alive and he looks still very sick, very ill, like he is dying. And as the trio leaves Hagrid's hut, because Dumbledore and Fudge and McNair, the executioner who kills Buckbeak, they're all arriving to Hagrid's hut. So the trio has to leave, you know, because they gotta go. And the whole time that they're leaving, Scabbers is just absolutely losing it. He's biting Ron. He's trying so hard to escape. And it's just really crazy. And the chapter ends with Buckbeak's head being chopped off. You know, it was a pretty sad note. But I would like to say that it doesn't get sadder, but I guess it kind of does. I mean, this definitely isn't the saddest book. But these next few chapters, there's so much that happens. Literally so much good stuff. So I'm super excited to get into it. So make sure you've read chapter 17 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Cat, Rat, and Dog. So the chapter starts off right where the last one ended, with Buckbeak dying. The trio is just horrified. They want to go back to Hagrid to comfort him, but they can't because they'll get in trouble. They might get Hagrid in trouble. Harry especially is not supposed to be out after dark because Sirius Black is, you know, on the loose and he's apparently after Harry. So it's just a bad combo. They're not supposed to be there at all. And Scabbers is still terrified, still trying to escape Ron's hand, and he bites him. He's just trying to escape his grasp, and they don't know why he's freaking out. And it's because he knows that Sirius is around, and now that he's, like, out on the open, like, loose, Scabbers, aka Peter, is just absolutely terrified. He is such a coward. He just doesn't want to face him at all. And also, he sees Crookshanks, so that makes him more terrified. And that's kind of what the trio thinks that Scabbers is afraid of. Of course, they have no idea that Scabbers is actually Peter, and he's scared that Sirius is going to get him. But Crookshanks is there, you know, on the grass, and Scabbers sees him, the trio sees him as in Crookshanks, and Scabbers finally breaks free, and Crookshanks runs after him, and Ron follows. He just got his pet rat back. He's not going to just let him go. So he follows him, chasing after Scabbers. And then, so Ron throws the cloak off. Remember, they're all underneath the invisibility cloak right now. So Ron throws the cloak off to run after Scabbers. And then Harry and Hermione have to go chase after Ron now. And they're just running around with chasing after Ron, who's chasing after Scabbers. Then finally, they reach him, and Hermione tells him to get back under the cloak, you know, we don't want to get caught out here. And then Harry sees the dog. And it's serious, but it's also the dog that he's been seeing all year, the Grim. So, and this time, Ron and Hermione also see it. So they're kind of like, oh no, like Harry sees this, we see this. What does this mean? Remember, the Grim was an omen of death. That is why Professor Trelawney said that he was going to be dying soon, or going to be the first one to die. So, you know, this isn't really a good sign for them right now. And they all see it, and it's too late. Like, Harry reaches for his wand, but it's too late. The dog just kind of, like, jumps at him, and it throws Harry back, and then he jumps for Ron, and he throws him back down because Ron had stood up, and now he's back on the grass, and the dog bites him. Remember, this is serious. He bites Ron's arm. Like, Ron's arm is outstretched, the arm that has Peter Pettigrew, aka Scabbers, in it. And it hurts Ron, and, you know, he's being dragged away at, like, the base of the Whomping Willow. Remember, the Whomping Willow is the tree that Harry and Ron got kind of caught in last year when they flew the car to Hogwarts. That tree almost killed them. And the tree's been mentioned a few times throughout this book because it is important, and I've kind of talked about the importance of it already. But that is where this dog, who is Sirius, is dragging Ron, who is holding Scabbers, into, like, at the base of the tree. And Ron is fighting for his life. Like, Ron is trying really hard to get out of, like, the dog's jaws so he can escape, but it's not working. And he gets dragged underneath, but his leg, and he wraps his leg around the trunk, or not the trunk of the tree, but, like, a root that's growing from the trunk or whatever. He wraps his leg around it to try to not be dragged into the tree by this dog. But the dog is so strong, it just, like, drags Ron still. It's not letting go of him. And Ron's leg snaps. It completely just snaps and breaks his leg. So I could just imagine how painful that would be to, like, be holding on for literally your life with your leg around a tree root, and a dog who's already biting you just keeps dragging you so hard, that with so much force, that your leg just snaps. That's what happens to Ron. And it's also dark out. Like, the sun's not out. It's pretty dark out, so can't really see anything. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, something hits Harry so hard that he's just, like, knocked to the ground. Happens to Hermione too. She's shrieking in pain. Harry has to blink blood out of his eyes. Like, that's how hard he was hit. The Whomping Willow hit him so hard, he's blinking blood out of his eyes, and he has glass. Like, it's all a mess, right? There's a lot going on. So they have to kind of get around the Whomping Willow, and they have to go save Ron. Hermione says that they need to go for help, but Harry says that there's no time. That dog is huge, and he can eat Ron, like, super fast, or hurt him even more. Like, we don't have time. And he says that if the dog can get in, then so can they. But they're hurt, they're bleeding, they're in pain. Harry, Ron, Hermione all are, but they don't know what's happening to Ron because he disappeared with the dog into the tree. So Harry's saying that there is no time. They really just need to, like, go and save Ron and do what they can quickly. So Crookshanks happens to, well, this whole time too, the tree is still throwing its branches, flailing, being all dangerous. But Crookshanks, Hermione's cat, he just, like, weaves through the branches and the swinging branches and everything, and he walks to the base of the tree, and there's, like, a little knot on the trunk, and he pushes it, and it works. The tree just stops moving. It's just, like, frozen almost, because Crookshanks touched or pushed that knot in. And Hermione is completely shocked. She's like, Crookshanks, how did he know to push that? And Harry says, he's friends with that dog. I've seen them together. Like, come on, we got to go in there after Ron. And yeah, they are friends. I think it's so funny that that's how Harry's like, oh, they're friends. I've seen them together. Because Harry realizes that he did, in fact, see Crookshanks and this dog together. It was, I don't know how many chapters ago it was. It was a few chapters for sure, but it was the morning of one of the Quidditch matches, and he couldn't sleep. He got woken up, so he was drinking some water, looking out the window, and he saw Crookshanks and the dog walking together, like, across the Hogwarts grounds. And so, you know, now he's like, yeah, I did in fact see that. They are friends. This is how Crookshanks knows how to get into this tree. So Harry and Hermione follow Crookshanks into the tree, and it's a tunnel, and they just kind of follow it along. And Harry explains that he has seen this tree on the map, and like the Marauder's map that Fred and George gave him, but Fred and George said that no one's ever gotten into it, and it goes off the edge of the map, so it looks like it might lead somewhere into Hogsmeade. So they're moving as fast as they can, but they can't really stand up in this tunnel. Remember, it's not built for humans per se, animals, or humans in their animagus form, or more specifically a werewolf, Lupin. That's who it was built for, which I explained like a few times. But so they're crouching down, bending over, trying to get through as fast as they can. They can't go as fast as Crookshanks, but they're trying. And this whole time, like, Harry can only think about Ron and what that dog might be doing to him. And he's running at a crouch, like, as fast as he can, because he's, you know, he's just scared. He's scared for Ron, and he wants to help him and everything. And Hermione is too. And they walk or run, I guess, for what seems like a while. And they get to this room, and it's very disordered. It's messy. It's dusty. There's stains all over the floor. Furniture is all broken up. Like, it's completely disheveled. The windows are all boarded up. It's a sketchy looking place, and it's deserted completely. But once they get there, Hermione says that, like, you know what? I think that we're in the Shrieking Shack. And then Harry looks around, and he sees the chunks, like, taken out of furniture, like the chair. Like, there's a chair, and there's a chunk taken out of it. He says, you know what? Ghosts don't do that. And because that's what everybody thinks, that the Shrieking Shack is haunted. But ghosts can't do things like take chunks out of furniture. And it's actually Lupin. Remember, Lupin used this place to do transformations in when he was a student at Hogwarts. That's what Dumbledore had it, the Whomping Willow, planted for. So he would go in here and do his transformations. And since he couldn't bite other humans, he would bite himself, or he would bite the furniture. And that's what, like, that chunk being taken out of the chair is for. It's because of Lupin and his werewolf form. He had to bite something. And in this room, there's like a hallway, there's stairs, so it's a shack, you know, so it's not necessarily like one big room. There's kind of little sections of it, I guess you can say. And they're still hearing like shrieking and screeching from upstairs, and it's Ron, so they're like, okay, we gotta get going. So Harry and Hermione are pretty scared, but as quietly and quickly as they can, they walk up the crumbling staircase. It's not necessarily the most sturdy thing. It's like loud, right? So they're trying to be quiet and quick and everything. And they get there. They're ready with their wands. They still hear like purring. They hear like a loud moan. It's weird stuff going on. And it's, of course, Crookshanks, right? So they get inside, and with their wands out in front of them, and they see a big four-poster bed. Crookshanks is on it, and so is Ron. And Ron's leg is at, like, an angle that a leg should never be. So you know it's broken very badly. Crookshanks, at the sight of Harry and Hermione, purrs. He's, like, purring very loudly as soon as they walk in. So, you know, some of this stuff is kind of weird, right? So they're like, Ron, are you okay? Where's the dog? Like, what's going on? And Ron, who is in an insane amount of pain, is like, you know, his teeth are gritted in pain, like he's trying hard to speak. And he says that it's not a dog, it's a trap. He's the dog, he's the animagus. And he's staring over Harry's shoulder. And I just have to say, like, this part in the movie, it is one of my favorite scenes of all time. This entire Shrieking Shack part is just so, so, so well done. I would say that it's probably the most, I don't know if I would say like dramatic, but it's definitely the most intense situation that the trio has been in up until this point in the movies. And I just think the way that the trio, when they filmed it, they were what, like 14, 15 or so. And they just did so good with this whole scene. And of course, they had the amazing Gary Oldman, Alan Rickman, David Thewlis there. But still, like, I absolutely love, love, love this part in the movies. And they all just did such a great job. And so reading this, every time I reread this chapter, this book, I really just picture the movie a lot of times because it's just so well done. So I totally just imagine Ron pointing like he's a dog, he's an animagus, and the door opens and revealed Sirius behind the door, and he looks all messy and dirty and everything. So that's just totally what I picture. But that is what happens, right? They look over Harry's shoulder and they see a man emerge from the shadows and close the door behind them. And he's described as a mass of filthy, matted hair hung to his elbows. If eyes hadn't been shining out of the deep, dark sockets, he might have been a corpse. The waxy skin was stretched so tightly over the bones of his face, it looked like a skull. His yellow teeth were bared in a grin. It was Sirius Black. And right away, he has Ron's wand, so he disarms them with Expelliarmus. And Harry and Hermione's wand shoot out of their hands, and Sirius Black catches them, and he steps closer to them. And so, you know, they're pretty scared for sure. And that's Sirius's first spell in 12 years, is Expelliarmus. So, you know, and that's Harry's signature spell, or what becomes Harry's signature spell, and that's his godfather using it. So, you know, I wouldn't say it's full circle, but it's definitely like a little detail, right? And as Sirius is talking, his voice is super hoarse. It sounds like he hasn't used his voice in a very long time, which he probably hasn't, at least not his like human voice. I mean, he did speak to Ron a few months ago or a few weeks ago or whatever, just saying like, where is he, or whatever he said to Ron. But still, like his voice, he just has not used it very much in 12 years. So it's very hoarse, and it sounds like he can't speak properly. So Sirius tells him, I thought you'd come and help your friend. Your father would have done the same for me. Brave of you not to run to a teacher. I'm grateful. It'll make everything much easier. And, you know, saying that James would have done the same for him, that's just too much for Harry to hear. He takes it as like a taunt about his dad, and he's just absolutely furious. He feels this extreme boiling hatred just like bubble up in his chest, and he just has no fear. He's not scared. He's just full of like furious hatred, and right away he just wants to kill Sirius. Like that's what he wants to do. Not just attack, but to kill. He doesn't even know what he's doing. He just steps forward, but he feels two pairs of hands grab him, and it's Hermione and Ron grabbing him. And Hermione tells him, no, Harry, like, stop. And she's terrified because she knows what Harry wants to do. And Ron says, and he stands up as he's saying this despite his leg being broken terribly, and he says, if you want to kill Harry, you'll have to kill us too. And I'll mention this when I do my book and movie comparison episode, but something I do want to mention now is just, this is another example of one of Ron's lines being given to Hermione. Hermione is the one that says, if you want to kill Harry, you'll have to kill us too, in the movie. But in the book, it's Ron saying it. I mean, not that Hermione, it's out of character for Hermione to say it. I don't think it is, but it was just an unnecessary change. Like, I don't think that needed to happen, you know? So still though, I think it's like a really great mark of their friendship that both Ron and Hermione grab Harry and they're like, no, like, you want to kill him, you'll kill us too. That's just how much they love each other. They have such a deep friendship. And it reminds Sirius of his friendship with James and even with Lupin. Not right now necessarily, but it was at that point. It'll get back to that point. Something flickers in Black's eyes when Ron says that. And he recognizes that friendship and how deep it runs. But he does tell Ron, like, sit back down, you'll damage your leg even more. And Ron, even though he is in extreme pain in a very weak voice, and he's like shaking because he's in so much pain trying to stand upright, holding on to Harry, he says, did you hear me? You'll have to kill all three of us. So again, that's just such a great example of the friendship that the trio has and what they would do for each other. Like, they would do a lot, including die for each other, which is probably the most intense thing you can do. And then Sirius says, there will only be one murder here tonight. And so the rest of this chapter, the rest of the book, honestly, is kind of chaotic. There's like a lot going on. But basically the next few pages is just a lot of anger on Harry's part and fear on Ron and Hermione's. So Sirius Black, you know, he says there'll only be one murder here tonight. And Harry, who is being held back by Ron and Hermione, who tries to, like, free himself from their grasp, is saying, oh, why is that? You didn't care last time. It didn't matter to you that you were killing all of those muggles to get at Pettigrew, and you've gone soft in Azkaban now. And Hermione tells him, like, Harry, like, stop talking. And he shouts, like, you know, all caps, like, he killed my mom and dad. And, like, he took, like, a huge effort and was able to, like, free himself from Ron and Hermione's, like, grasp. And he forgot about magic. He forgot that he was short and skinny in 13, and Black was tall, full-grown man. And Harry didn't even care. He just wanted to hurt Black as badly as he felt that hurt. Like, he wanted to just hurt him as badly as he could. And he didn't care how much he got hurt in the process. And, like, Harry is kind of thinking, like, maybe it was the shock of him running and lunging at Sirius so fast that Sirius Black didn't even stop to think about using a wand. He's kind of caught off guard by Harry, like, running at him. And Harry, like, throws him to the ground, and Black still has the wand in his hand. So there's, like, all these sparks that are running into the air or flying into the air, missing Harry's face just by a few inches. And it's just a lot, but he's clinging on. He's not letting go of Sirius Black, no matter how much Sirius is, like, struggling and trying to throw him off. And then, all of a sudden, Sirius is his free hand, the one that doesn't have the wand in it. It like, finds Harry's throat, and he starts to choke him. And, like, he says, no, I've waited too long, and he starts to choke Harry. And this whole time, Ron and Hermione are yelling and screaming. And seriously, Sirius, like, that's a bit excessive. Like, I've said it so many times for this podcast. There are so many examples of when Sirius does not act like a innocent man. And this is definitely one of them. Like, I don't know what he's doing here. Yes, he's waited too long to be hurt badly by Harry to render him unable to exact his revenge on Peter Pettigrew. But he just continues to go about it the wrong way, not acting like an innocent man. And as Sirius is choking Harry, Ron and Hermione get up, and Harry sees Hermione kick Sirius, so he lets go of Harry. Ron throws himself onto Sirius's wand-free hands. Like, there's just a whole tangle of bodies and everything, and Harry sees his own wand rolling across the floor, and all this stuff happens. And then suddenly, Crookshanks joins into this little wrestling match kind of thing they have going on here, and he tries to stop Harry from getting his wand, and, like, Harry kicks Crookshanks, or he at least aims a kick towards Crookshanks, because he sees that Crookshanks is going towards Harry's wand and wants to stop Harry from getting the wand. So Harry yells at Crookshanks, says, no, you don't, and he aims a kick at Crookshanks, and that makes Crookshanks leap out of the way so he's not kicked. And he shouts at Ron and Hermione and tells them to get out of the way. And they don't need to be told twice. And again, I should explain, Crookshanks was trying to stop Harry from getting the wand because Crookshanks knows that Sirius is innocent. Remember, he told Hermione, I've seen them together, they're friends, like the dog and Crookshanks. The dog we know is Sirius. And it's true, I guess you could say they are friends. But basically, Sirius explains, like, why Peter Pettigrew is the guilty one. And, you know, I've talked about that so much on this podcast. But that's just, like, a reminder that's, like, the connection there. And that is why Crookshanks tried to stop Harry from getting his wand, because he knew that Harry was going to attack Sirius if he got to it. And although Harry doesn't know it right now, he will later, pretty soon, realize that, like, Crookshanks stopping him from getting the wand was, like, a good act because Sirius is innocent. So you go, Crookshanks. Thanks for that. Even though Harry doesn't understand it right now. And so finally, you know, Harry tells Ron and Hermione, get out of the way. And they do, and they listen, even though they're all bleeding and in pain. Remember, Ron has a horribly broken leg right now. So Harry grabs his wand and he points it straight at Sirius's heart. And he says, "Going to kill me, Harry?" And Harry tells him, with like a slightly shaky voice, he tells him, "You killed my parents." And Sirius tells him, "I don't deny it, but if you knew the whole story..." And Harry's like, "What? I don't need to know the whole story. I know that you sold them to Voldemort, and that's all I need to know. Like, I don't need any other details." And Sirius now is talking with some urgency. Like, you can hear the urgency in his voice, and he's saying, "No, you need to listen to me. You'll regret it. If you don't listen to me, you don't understand what's going on." And Harry just keeps saying, like, "No, I do understand. I understand perfectly." And it's interesting. He tells him, "You never heard her, did you, my mom, trying to stop Voldemort killing me?" Because that's what he hears with the Dementors. That's why those Dementors affect him so much. Not necessarily because his mom died, but that's a big part of it. Harry has experienced hardships and sorrow that other people have not. And that is why the Dementors affect him so badly, because they love to feed off of that pain and sorrow and all of that. But Harry telling Sirius that this is what he hears when he, you know, he can imply, like, with the Dementors, that's a pretty interesting thing to tell him. Like, I don't think that he would have deserved to know that if Sirius Black were the guilty man that Harry thinks he is in this moment. Like, I still don't think he should have given him that information. That's like, that's a little personal. And, you know, Harry in his mind, he's kind of thinking, like, well, am I gonna kill him right now? Like, I don't know. It's sort of a I just think it's a really personal detail that I don't think he should have told him. It works out because he's not the guilty man, but still, it's a little too personal. And this is also a part where I want to talk about the unforgivable curses. So in the fourth book, when Barty Crouch Jr. is disguised as Mad-Eye Moody for that whole year, he is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, and he's teaching the students that you have to really, 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 truly mean these unforgivable curses, otherwise it won't work. He says, like, if any of you tried to kill me right now with Avada Kedavra, I doubt that I would barely even get a nosebleed. You have to actually mean these curses for them to happen. So, like, Harry, for instance, right now, would he have actually been able to kill Black if he had enough hatred in his heart for him, like he feels he does? Then yes, but also he's hesitating, so that already is like a little bit of an indication, because it's Harry. If it was Voldemort and he was hesitating, it wouldn't be because, like, Voldemort has like a little bit of good in him. It's not because of that. It would be because he just hesitates because he like wants to get something out of this person he's about to kill. Like, there's no doubt in anyone's mind that Voldemort wouldn't be able to do any of these curses, because he always has been, ever since he tried when he was like 15, 16. But with Harry, yes, he feels so much hatred for Black, but would it actually work? You know, like, it's really interesting. I don't know if it would. And in this moment in time, Harry thinks that Sirius is very guilty and he's responsible for his parents' death, even though it's not the case. But that's what he thinks. That's what he believes in this moment. And I still wonder if it would have been enough to kill him, or even like hurt him with a Avada Kedavra. Like, would it have given him a nosebleed? It wouldn't have killed him, I don't think. And then 2 years from now, when Sirius does die, when Bellatrix kills him, Harry also like isn't fully able to do the Cruciatus curse, because he has to mean it. So I don't know. I just think it's interesting that even when Sirius dies, like, he wasn't fully able to do it. And I don't think it's because he didn't feel hatred, because he did, from Bellatrix in that moment, and just sorrow. But I think it was just such extreme pain that his godfather had just died. And there was a lot of shock and like running through Harry, because he was like, this just happened. Like, I'm just going to go run after her. So it's an interesting, like, conundrum, I guess. There's different sides to it, but I really wonder whether Harry would have been able to accomplish what he wanted to do right here. But then another example is in Deathly Hallows, when Harry is at Hogwarts to find the last Horcruxes and everything. He goes there, and McGonagall is like disrespected by a Death Eater. I think a Death Eater like spits at her, and Harry just right away Cruciatus curse, and he does it successfully. And it's like that worked. You have to really mean it in order to make any of those curses work. So it's, I don't know. It's really interesting because it's like McGonagall was disrespected. That was enough. But even in this moment when it's like all that hatred, knowing that this person, or thinking that this person is responsible for the death of his parents, it, I don't know if it would have worked. And age might have something to do with it, but I just think that who Harry is right now in this moment in time, at this part in the book, I don't know if it would have worked to do the killing curse. So again, like Harry's like, I understand better than you think. And he was telling him how he can heal. He can hear his mom trying to stop Voldemort from killing Harry. Like that's what he hears with the Dementors and everything. And before any of them can say anything else, Crookshanks jumps onto Sirius's chest and is right, just kind of settles himself there, right where Harry's wand is pointing. Harry's wand is pointing at Sirius's heart, and that is exactly where Crookshanks like leapt to defend him. And Black tries to like push him off, but Crookshanks sinks his claws into Black's robes and he just won't shift. So he turns his face and looks up at Harry, and of course Hermione, this is her pet, she's sobbing right now. She is like, oh my gosh, what is happening? She cannot believe it, because that's her pet, but she knows Harry. Harry's her best friend, and she knows like what he's feeling right now and what's running through his head. So she is terrified right now. And Harry looks down at Crookshanks and at Sirius. And he's still holding his wand. He still hasn't done anything. And he thinks, so what? So what if I have to kill Crookshanks too? It's in league with Sirius. And it's if it's prepared to die protecting Sirius, that's none of my business. That's literally what Harry's thinking, you know? And he also, the thought that also runs through his head is like, if Sirius wants to save this cat, it only proves he cares more for the cat, than he did for my parents, his supposed best friends. So, you know, that's kind of what Harry's thinking about right now. So he raises his wand and he's thinking, now is the moment to do it. He is going to avenge his parents right now. He's going to kill Sirius Black. He has to kill him. This is the chance. But time just keeps going on. Seconds pass, more seconds pass. He still hasn't done it. He doesn't know what to do still. He's you know, he's trying again. Like, if he was really able to or wanted to kill him, then why didn't he do it already? You know? So Harry is definitely has some internal turmoil right now. But he's still just standing there, wand raised, not doing anything, just staring at Sirius and Crookshanks. And as time goes on, at this point, Hermione is just, like, silent. She accepts what Harry is going to do, or what he seems like he's going to do, which is kill Sirius. And she sees that her pet, who she loves, is protecting this guy, this Sirius, who is responsible for the death of Harry's parents. Hermione is like kind of accepted it almost. And that's why she's quiet, because she loves Harry that much. Of course she loves Crookshanks too, but the evidence in front of her is too much, like, against Sirius and against Crookshanks, and she knows how Harry feels, and she doesn't want to get in the way with that. So I think that's why she's just gone, like, silent. So suddenly you hear, like, footsteps coming, like, from downstairs. Someone's, like, coming up the stairs is what they're hearing. And then Hermione screams very loudly, like, we're up here, Sirius Black is up here, come quick. And so Sirius is startled by that, and he makes a startled move. He stands up and everything. Harry's still holding on to his wand, and he hears a voice in his head telling him, do it now. But he still has a few seconds, and he still doesn't do it. He still doesn't kill him. And then the footsteps are like running up the stairs. He hears it, still hasn't done it. And then someone bursts the door open, and you see like these red sparks. And it is Professor Lupin. And he does Expelliarmus, and Harry's wand flies out of his hand, and so do the ones that Hermione is holding. So Lupin catches them all and then moves around the room, stares at Sirius, And Crookshanks is still on Sirius's chest right now. So he's still protecting him right now. And Harry, like, again, if he really wanted to do it, he would have. He could have, right? Even, and it's such a strange, it's probably such a strange sensation in his head, because he knows how much he hates Sirius and how much hurt he feels at what Sirius did to his parents. Yet he can't do it. Why can't he? Why doesn't he have the nerve to do it? Like, why doesn't he have the courage to do so, or whatever, right? But it's probably like more courage not to do so. So there's a lot of like morally gray areas right here, but Harry just feels empty because he's like, I can't even believe that I like didn't do this, even though I should have and I had ample time to do so. He just didn't do it. So here's Professor Lupin. He has the wands that he just Expelliarmus, you know. So he has all these wands in his hand and he looks at Sirius and he says, where is he, Sirius? Harry looks at Lupin, Ron and Hermione are looking at Lupin. They're all very confused right now. They don't understand what Lupin's talking about. They don't know what's going on at all. And Sirius, they look at Sirius's face again, and he has like no emotion, like no expression on his face. He doesn't even move for a few seconds. Then slowly he points at Ron, and they're all just bewildered right now. Harry, Ron, Hermione, they're like, what is going on? We don't know who you're talking about. They could not be more confused right now. So I'm going to read this short paragraph of Lupin's like epiphany. So it says, but then, Lupin muttered, staring at Black so intently it seemed he was trying to read his mind. Why hasn't he shown himself before now? Unless, and then Lupin's eyes suddenly widened as though he was seeing something beyond Black, something none of the rest could see. Unless he was the one. Unless you switched without telling me. Very slowly, his sunken gaze never leaving Lupin's face, Black nodded. And then Harry's like, Professor, what's going on? Like, he interrupts very loudly, actually. He doesn't, like, say it quietly like that. But to explain this part right here. So Lupin says, why hasn't he shown himself before now? He's talking about Peter Pettigrew. Because remember, the map never lies, the Marauder's map. And that is what Lupin saw Peter on. And the map never lies. And he thought he was dead. He thought Sirius killed him. Right? He's thought that for 12 years, just like everybody else has. So Lupin says, why hasn't he shown himself before now? And he's starting to put together because he says, unless he was the one, unless you switched without telling me. So remember, everybody, not everybody, but the people who knew, who were close to the Potters, like Dumbledore knew this, Lupin, you know, like their friends, they knew about the Fidelius charm and the secret keeper. Remember, you could hide a secret within somebody else and nobody else will ever know that secret unless the secret keeper chooses to divulge that information, unless they choose to provide, in this case, unless Peter Pettigrew, who was a secret keeper, chose to provide the address of where they were hiding, the location of where they were hiding, Voldemort would have never found them. But like Lupin says here, unless he was the one and you switched without telling me. Remember, everybody, Dumbledore, Lupin, they all thought that Sirius Black was still the Potter's secret keeper. And they were like, well, he told Voldemort where to find them because he was a Death Eater. It was the wrong man. Peter Pettigrew was the one who told Voldemort to find them because Peter Pettigrew was the Death Eater. And Peter was the one who became the secret keeper. So that's why Lupin was like, you switched without telling me. It was Sirius's idea. He was like, you know what? Voldemort and all the Death Eaters, they're going to know that I'm the secret keeper because we're so close, because you and I are best friends, James. And even though I would rather die than betray you still, like, I think it's better chance that we switch the secret keeper to Peter, because of course he'll never betray you, right? He loves you. He loves us. He's not going to do that. Well, he did. And Lupin didn't know they switched the secret keeper. Dumbledore didn't know they switched the secret keeper. So that is this whole epiphany here. Lupin is like, oh, like he just understands it all now. They switched the secret keepers. And this terrible person that everybody thinks Sirius is actually Peter. Peter's actually the guilty one. And so imagine like thinking Sirius was guilty all the like these years for 12 years, and then suddenly seeing one of your best friends here for the first time in like that amount of time or even longer, and you realize he's a free man, he's gone through all of this in the past 12 years. Like, imagine how you must feel like seeing this happen to your friend. And it's probably so emotional for them because now Sirius is like, and now you know the truth. And Sirius is like, okay, now I'm vindicated in your eyes. Like, that's big for him. So as I had mentioned, that Harry interrupts and like, Professor, what's going on during Lupin's mini epiphany here? Lupin lowers his wand and he walks towards Sirius and he goes and hugs him, like as if he were his brother. And then Harry feels like his stomach just drops. He's like, what the heck? Like, why is he hugging him? Again, he doesn't know anything here right now. So seeing this just is like the biggest shock that Harry could have right now. He is completely mystified. And like, imagine how emotional this moment is for Sirius and Lupin. Like, again, like they barely exchange any words and Lupin knows the whole story and he knows what has happened and what his friend has gone through, and now Sirius is like, okay, now he knows, like, finally. It's a lot. It's probably super emotional for them right now. But Harry, Ron, Hermione, or especially Harry, he's like, what, why are you hugging him as if he's your brother? What is going on here? So Hermione is the first one to say something. She screams and she says, I don't believe it. And she's just like trying to find words to say. She's like, you and him. Like, she's just saying things, right? And so Lupin is saying, Hermione, calm down. But she's saying, I didn't tell anyone. I've been covering for you. But Lupin's just shouting, like, I can explain if you could just listen to me. And Harry, he's very mad. This is like a big betrayal to him right here, seeing this exchange between Sirius and Lupin. Like, that's a big betrayal. And he's just shaking with a new wave of anger. And he's saying, like, I've trusted you, and all this time you've been his friend. But Lupin tells him, you're wrong. I haven't been Sirius's friend for a long time, but I am now. Because all those 12 years, he thought that Sirius truly did betray Lily and James. And so, you know, he's thought of him as this terrible person. But now he's understood that, of course, he would never betray them. And it was Peter all along. He's like, that friendship is like revived again, kind of, you know. So Hermione's saying, no, Harry, like, don't trust him. He's been helping Sirius get into the castle and he wants you dead too. He's a werewolf. And that is like one of the biggest reveals that has happened in Harry Potter. Like, it's one of the biggest reveals of I don't know if it's like a plot twist necessarily, but it's a really big reveal, one of the biggest ones of the series. And Hermione knew this secret all like for a long time. She never told anybody. She didn't say a single thing to anybody. So, you know, she's hurt right now too, because she's like, I knew all along, I didn't say anything to anybody. And here you are, like, friends with Sirius. And then she revealed, like, you're a werewolf. And so it's pretty quiet there for a second. Even though Lupin goes a bit pale, he's pretty calm. And he says, all right, Hermione, only one out of three. I won't deny I'm a werewolf. But he says, I have not been helping Sirius get into the castle, and I definitely don't want Harry dead. And this part, next part here, kind of shows like the bias and stigma towards werewolves and just other magical creatures in the wizarding world, of course, but particularly werewolves, because Ron, who is pureblood, in fact, him and Sirius are the only purebloods in this room right now, because Hermione's muggle-born, Harry's half-blood, Lupin's half-blood. But Ron, who is pureblood and who has grown up in a full wizarding family, both sides of his family are wizards for generations and generations. He knows the bias and stigma towards werewolves. He knows that they're apparently like bad news, right? And so Ron, despite his leg being just totally messed up, completely broken, shattered, whatever it is, right? Just badly broken. He stands up and like actually falls back because he's in pain because of his leg. And then Lupin tries to go towards him because he looks concerned. He sees Ron's leg is bent at a really incorrect angle for a leg. But Ron tells him, "Get away from me, werewolf." And Lupin just stops dead right away because he's like, yep, this is it. This is how people are going to act towards me and will react towards me once they know what I am right away. Someone, Ron, who had no problem with Lupin ever until this point, he understands like this is what I am. This is who I am as a person. And this is the reaction I'm going to get no matter what I do for other people, right? And of course, right now they think that Lupin has been in cahoots with Sirius, so that doesn't help him. But it's the werewolf thing right now that's like the standout like news, right? That's just happened. So then Lupin just stops and he's like, okay. Turns to Hermione, he asks her, "How long have you known?" And also Ron, like, what were you gonna do standing up? I don't know if he was standing up to try to get further away from him. Or what? That's kind of what I read it as, but still, I wonder what Ron could have done in this moment standing up with one working leg. And then Hermione says, "I've known for ages, ever since I did Professor Snape's essay." So remember when Lupin, of course, you know, his werewolfness, you know, he has to miss some class, he was sick, that's what he was telling people, but it was really like the full moon was getting to him. As a werewolf, of course. And so Professor Snape had to substitute teacher for him for Defense Against the Dark Arts. And randomly he was like, you know what? We're going to learn about werewolves. And here's a homework assignment. Here's an essay, a super long essay you have to do. And Hermione was the only one who realized. So Lupin was like, oh, Snape will be delighted. He assigned that essay hoping someone would realize what my symptoms meant. And he asks Hermione, "Did you check the lunar charts and realize that I was always ill at the full moon? Or did you realize that the Boggart changed into the moon when it saw me?" Remember, people were like, oh, it's why is he afraid of a crystal ball? I think it was Lavender Brown or either Pavarti or Padma that said, oh, why is he scared of crystal balls? But I explained that it was the moon. The moon was his Boggart. That is what he is most afraid of. So Hermione says both, like both. Were how she figured it out, plus the essay and everything. And Lupin, with forced laughter, tells her, "Wow, you really are the cleverest witch of your age I've ever met, Hermione." But Hermione tells him, "Actually, I'm not. If I had been a bit cleverer, I would have told everyone what you are." And Lupin's like, "Okay, but everyone already knows. Not everybody, but the staff knows." And Ron, again, like, grew up with in a full wizarding family who knows that werewolves are bad news. He says, "Dumbledore hired you when he knew you were a werewolf? Is he mad?" Like, Ron is shocked right now because, again, I should mention another instance of this happens in Goblet of Fire, where Harry and Ron are eavesdropping and they find out that Hagrid is half giant. And even being half giant is like scandalous of sorts because it's like creatures, right? So Harry, who grew up with muggles and doesn't know like everything about the wizarding world, doesn't really think anything of it at all. And Ron, who grew up with wizards, is like shocked. He's like, "Harry, like giants are not good, right? Not that Hagrid isn't good, but just giants like are bad news, right? This is just a lot of like stigma and everything in the wizarding world." But this is just an example. The first example of Ron being like, "What? Why would Dumbledore hire you when he knew you were a werewolf?" It's just a lot of shock on Ron's part. And so Lupin explains, some of the staff did think that he was mad for hiring me. He had to work very hard to convince certain teachers that he was even trustworthy. Like, and, you know, there's a lot of new information that the trio is learning right now. And emotions are running really high, right? Harry is still freshly angry after his failed attempt at, sort of attempt at killing Sirius, and then learning that Lupin is now friends with Sirius. Like, you know, he has a lot of anger still, right? Emotions are running high for everybody. Ron is in a lot of pain. He's shocked that Lupin's a werewolf, that he's friends with Sirius. Same with Hermione. She's shocked that he's friends with Sirius, and she's upset with herself for not revealing he was a werewolf sooner. Everybody just has, and of course, Ron and Hermione are still terrified for Harry right now. And of course, Sirius Black is still here, and Sirius wants his revenge. Like, you know, there's emotions are running high for everybody right now. There's just a lot going on and everything. So again, Lupin says some of the staff did think that Dumbledore was mad to hire me, and he had to really work hard to convince certain teachers that I was trustworthy and everything. And Harry yells at him, he was wrong. You've been helping him the whole time, him pointing to Black, who is just kind of like in that four-poster bed in the corner with Crookshanks in his lap. And Lupin says, I haven't been helping Sirius. Just give me a chance and I'll explain. He's like, here, watch. So he throws their wands back to them. He throws Ron's back to Ron, Hermione's back to Hermione, and Harry back to him. So they all get their old wands back. He's like, there. And he puts his wand into his belt. And he's like, you three are armed. We aren't. We being him and Sirius, we're not armed. Now will you listen? And Harry is like, what? What was that? Like, I don't know. This must be some sort of trick. Like, I don't know what to think. And Ron and Hermione are probably thinking, like, the same thing. Like, this has to be some sort of trick. But Harry's like, okay. He's like, let me start asking some important questions then. If you haven't been helping him, referring to Sirius, then how did you know he was here? And he tells him the map, the Marauder's map. Remember the one that I confiscated from you? Harry's like, okay, you know how to work it? And Lupin's like, of course I know how to work it. I helped write it. I'm Moony. That's my friend's nickname for me at school. Remember, it's Mr. Moody Wormtail. Sorry, that sounded like I said Moody, but Moony is what I meant. Not like Mad-Eye Moony, but Moony, M-O-O-N-Y, like the moon, right? Moony, werewolf, full moon, where, you know, that's how his nickname came to be. But it's Moony, which is Lupin, Wormtail, which is Peter Pettigrew, because, you know, the rat tail and everything. Padfoot, which is Sirius, the dog, his animagus form, and then Prongs, which is James, Harry's dad, like the stag, like a big deer with the antlers and everything, Prongs. So that's where the nicknames come from, and that's who it says are the creators of the map. So this is like another huge epiphany, right? Like there's just so much information coming at them right now, and they're only going to get even more in the next few chapters. But Lupin continues to say, I have been watching it very carefully this evening because I had an idea that you, Ron, Hermione might try and sneak out of the castle because he figured that they would want to go be with Hagrid while Buckbeak was getting executed. And he was right, so it's good that he was checking the map and everything. And it's interesting, like, Sirius wasn't always at Hogwarts during these times, but I'm sure he's come back more than once since Lupin has had the map. So I really wonder, like, why, like, if he hadn't seen Sirius before, maybe he looked at the wrong times and Sirius happens to still be in Hogsmeade, but it's just something else to think about. And then Lupin's like, well, you guys might have been wearing your dad's old cloak, Harry. And Harry's like, wait, how do you know about the cloak? And Lupin is getting impatient now. And I mean, I kind of get it. Stakes are high. Emotions are running high. Of course, he's going to get impatient. But also, he knows that Harry and Ron and Hermione have like a million questions. Of course, they're going to be interrupting him with like, how do you know about the cloak? How do you know about the map? Like, they're shocked at all of this news. Of course, he's going to be like interrupted, like Lupin getting impatient. I understand. But still, like, you got to explain it to them. You got to fill in these pieces for them a little bit better. But he says, the number of times I saw James disappearing under that cloak. Like, he's like, that's how I know it. And he's saying, the point is, even if you're wearing the cloak, you still show up on the Marauder's map. Like, it doesn't matter. You're still going to show up on there. You can still see where you're walking and everything. And he says that he saw the three of them cross the grounds, go into Hagrid's hut. 20 minutes later, they left Hagrid and went back towards the castle. But then you were accompanied by somebody else. So it was just you three. And then suddenly somebody else popped up and Harry's like, what? No, we weren't. It was just us three under the cloak. What are you talking about? And then Lupin tells him, I could not believe my eyes. I thought that the map must be malfunctioning. There was no way that he could be with you. That wasn't possible. But then I saw another dot. And again, this whole time Harry's like, nope, no one was with us. You're crazy. But Lupin tells him, I saw another dot moving really fast towards you. And it was labeled Sirius Black. And I saw him collide with you. And I watched as he pulled two of you into the Whomping Willow. And Ron is like, nope, it was one of us. Like, he's angry. He's like, they're all annoyed and angry. And I'm telling you, the trio right now, they've probably never been this hurt, betrayed, annoyed, angry, fearful in their lives right now. So they, you know, lots going on. And Ron's like, no, he only pulled one of us. He only pulled me into the Whomping Willow. And Lupin says, no, it was two of you. And then he says, do you think I could have a look at the rat? And then Ron's like, what? No. What does Scabbers have to do with this? And Lupin's like, he has everything to do with this. And this whole time too, you know, Scabbers, aka Peter, is there listening. He's totally listening to this whole thing. And he's like, oh no, I'm about to be in trouble. But he can't escape Ron's grip or whatever is going on. Like he knows that if he brings attention to himself by trying to run away, he's just going to get caught. And he's hoping like he won't get caught right now. Like, who knows what's going through Peter's head right now. He's trying to weigh his options and see like the best way to kind of like crawl his way out of this one, out of this trouble. So Ron, despite being extremely confused amongst many other emotions, hesitates a little bit, considers what Lupin says, and then he pulls Scabbers out of his robes and he is thrashing desperately. Like, this rat is moving like there's no tomorrow. He is trying to escape so badly. It's crazy how much he's moving around and thrashing right now. So Ron has to actually seize his long bald tail to stop him from escaping. And at the sight of Scabbers, Crookshank starts to like snarl and, you know, make those like hissing cat noises. And Lupin is kind of he's staring at Scabbers with some intent. Like, he's seeing this rat, knowing he's actually Peter for the first time in years, someone he thought who was dead, someone who he thought was very innocent, who was actually now extremely guilty and really just a messed up person, someone who used to be his friend. Like, lots of, again, so many emotions for all of them right now. But that is what he's kind of thinking. And again, Ron is like, what? Like, what does my rat have to do with anything? And then suddenly Sirius says, that's not a rat. And Ron's like, okay, you're crazy. Of course he's a rat. Like, why wouldn't he be? And Lupin's like, nope, he is not. He's a wizard. And Sirius says, he's an animagus by the name of Peter Pettigrew. And that is where the chapter ends. I guess it was kind of a short chapter compared to some of the other chapters in this book. But that is where it ends. And that's another one of like the biggest reveals. This would probably be like, I would say, the second biggest reveal. It's maybe top three. Like, it's definitely like second or third, I think, of the whole series. Like, I guess plot twist type of thing. I would say the first is like number one biggest plot twist would be in the Deathly Hallows, where it's revealed that Harry is a Horcrux and he has to die. So it's, you know, it's a big moment in the series, in this book. So really cool chapter, super fun. And it's just going to keep getting better. We still have a few more episodes for this book, but it's so good. I'm so excited to continue with it and everything. But that's the end of it. I would love to know what you guys thought. Next week's episode is actually an episode that I recorded months and months ago for chapter 18, because I had a guest host on it. And he's actually the host of another podcast and everything. So all of that will be revealed next week when I post it. But I'm excited for that one. It was a fun conversation about chapter 18. So just want to remind everybody that you can email me at theheirsoftheslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is The Heirs of Slytherin Podcast. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And we have so much more really cool information coming up in this series. I mean, in this, the whole series, of course, but this book in particular. So again, I love Prisoner of Azkaban. So I'm so excited to continue and everything. But make sure you read chapter 18 for next week's episode. So chapter 18 is Moony, Wormtail, Patfoot, and Prongs. Thank you for listening to The Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Mikaela, your host.